are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Oh, away we go. Chicken Dinner, Saturday, October 30th, 2021. Happy Halloween. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to the podcast so you get it once it goes live. We will talk to legendary, better, and also former bookmaker Alan Dinkinson transitioning from a bookie to a better. What was that process like? We'll touch on Dink's hockey handicapping style and also the time he beat Billy Walters to the spot. Billy was not too happy, so that coming up later on in the show. We are two wins away from an Atlanta Braves World Series. Atlanta pitched a two-hitter Friday night. They blanked the Astros 2-0. Is anybody rooting for Houston? Anybody? I don't think people in Texas even care outside of Houston. And even though Charlie Morton's out of the way, it's about that Atlanta bullpen, which showed you Friday night they are the best bullpen in this series. Timely hitting. And here we go. Two more wins to cash that ticket. 14-1. We got some 18-1. I know some of you have some 16-1. We are right there. We're right where we need to be. And there ain't going to be a hedge. I ain't hedging because I hate that Astros team. And we also can't hedge because we're doing it for Pauly. Hashtag do it for Pauly. Our dead fish who fell to the bottom of the tank and did not get to see his Atlanta Braves try and make history. So that's the way it has to be. We need two more wins. I'm feeling good about it. I love that Atlanta lineup. Love how they make pitchers work. And here's the other thing. I noticed this last night, and John Smoltz was talking about this during the broadcast. There may come a time in Game 4 or Game 5 when Yordan Alvarez has to make a play for the Astros in left field. That is not where Houston wants to be because he's a glorified designated hitter. He hits the shit out of the baseball, but he's not a good fielder. He's not quick. Don't think he has a good arm. So we shall see what happens. Maybe there's a sacrifice fly late in Game 4, late in Game 5, and Alvarez is out there because I don't even know that Dusty's going to take him out in the 7th or 8th inning for a defensive replacement. You need that bat at the plate. And this is what happens when the American League teams go into the National League in the World Series. But we are doing it for Pauly, and we are not hedging. Let's go, Bravos. Two more wins. And we will cash a very nice ticket. We've discussed Presbyterian multiple times on this show, and mostly the totals. Five line games this season, Presbyterian 4-1 to the over, or should I say because of the opposition. Presbyterian, of course, is the team that rarely punts. When they score, they onside kick, and they go for it almost every single time on fourth down. There was a spot last week. They were down two scores. I think it was the first quarter or early second quarter. It's 4th and 7 at their own 12. And they went for it. Didn't get it. A couple plays later, bang, bang. And then Presbyterians down 3 scores. In the 5 games with totals this season, 72-0, 63-43, 38-30. That was the only under, and that total was 93.5. 38-30, 70-35, 69-28. So 72, 106, 68, 105, 97. On the low end, they got to 68. It is 75.5 today against Stetson. How do you bet the under? This team just gives you points. They give you opportunities. They give you short fields. I think anything in the 70 range is a play over. And here's the other thing. When most books post this extra game total, this is usually an extra game or I guess an added game, the total will pop and then it will move up 5 points, 7 points, 9 points. Last week, the total opened 71 against San Diego. Got to 80. So you have to attack these early. And we've talked about this. This is nothing new. But I saw that total late Friday afternoon, 75.5 against Stetson. And I still don't think you can go under. I mean, look at what they've given up. 72, 63, 70, 69. That's a lot of points. And the coach, Kevin Kelly, is sticking to the script. We watched them one time this year punt. Actually, I've seen them punt twice now, I think. Fourth and 20 from their own five, they punted. And then last week in that game I just talked about against San Diego, they brought the punter out inside their own 30 or something like that. The punter punted the ball into a helmet of his offensive lineman. San Diego scooped it and scored. And I had a couple buddies go, yeah, that's why they don't punt. So we will be following. I will definitely be tweeting out the final score. I've been doing it pretty much every week on Twitter once it goes final. Actually, whenever the game goes over, I usually tweet about it. And it's usually early in the third quarter, late in the third quarter. A lot of these games haven't been close. We'll see what Presbyterian can do. Maybe they can cash another one for the boys. All right, picks. East Carolina came through Thursday, -9.5. Nice little sweat on a Thursday night. Michigan, -4 at Michigan State. I saw the Bear post this the other day at Chris Felica. Here were the last seven games for Michigan State against AP top 10 teams. 52-12 loss to Ohio State. 24-0 loss to Indiana. 28-7 loss to Penn State. 38-0 loss to Wisconsin. 34-10 loss to Ohio State. 26-6 loss to Ohio State. 21-7 loss to Michigan. Those are all within the last three seasons. And I know teams different, the players are different, but the results are the same. When Michigan State plays an elite team, they usually get cooked. And I don't know that Mel Tucker is going to go blow for blow with Jim Harbaugh. But really, this number should be higher. The respect factor is being played into Michigan State. There were some wise guys that took 5 and 4.5. I think Metcalf clearly opened a good number at Circa when he put up Michigan -4. Initial bet, they laid 4. The market got to 4.5. There were some 5s and then written right back down. So there is some respect in the market for Michigan State. And that's a really good number, but it's not the right number. This game should be 6. I think it should be 6.5. It's power run. And also, Michigan just grinds you down. They wear you down. This game might be close in the first half. Maybe it's close early third quarter, 17-13 Michigan, but eventually they're going to bust a big run, and they're going to make things happen in the passing game with the play action. Michigan State's defense is okay, far from great, and I look at this schedule. Is there a really good win on there? At Northwestern, Youngstown, at Miami, Nebraska at home, Western Kentucky at home, at Rutgers, at Indiana. Have they played a good team yet? Who's good there? This is their first test. And this is the first game they're going to play when they line up, the other team has better players at almost every single position. I think what they've done is awesome. To start 7-0, to make it into the top 10, great. But let's see what they do here. Let's see what they do against the top 10 team in the country. The results in the past have not been good. And I don't think Michigan State is up to speed. So I laid 4 with Michigan. Oklahoma -19. I think we've already talked about this. I have no issue with what happened against Kansas last week. It was Caleb Williams' first ever road start. Now they come back home and face a Texas Tech team that can't stop the run. I'm thinking maybe 250, 300 yards of rushing offense for Oklahoma, which makes the passing game easier. They are going to wear down the Red Raiders and beat the brakes off of them. They should. Haven't bet Oklahoma yet this season, and they haven't made people money. They're 3-5 against the number, and there are some games where they really were a lot closer than the number or the spread should have, indicated. But this is Oklahoma here. I think full attention after a very wobbly spot in Lawrence. They are focused. They are ready. And they are going to carve up Texas Tech. Red Raiders also fired their head coach. And it wasn't like he wasn't well-liked by the players. It's not like a rally-around moment. I think it gets worse before it gets better. Ole Miss, I'm bullish on this. Market's at 3. Bet 2.5. Probably take some more 3. I don't care. It's Matt Corral for me. He's the guy that I want with the ball in his hands late in this game. I think he keeps him around. I love their offense. Fifth in the country in rushing, fifth in total yards, seventh in points per game. They attack you in so many different ways. Endless speed and tempo. Don't know that Auburn can go score for score. And this total makes me think that, you know, Ole Miss is going to have their way on offense. I've also never been a big fan of Bo Nix in big games. And I'm just not really high on Auburn yet. So we shall see this number 66 on the total. And Auburn painted 3. Minus 105 at some places, but mostly 3 flat. Mississippi at Auburn, 195 and 196. I will take the points with Matt Corral and Ole Miss. We've also talked about the Browns. Laid 3.5. Market now, I think, 4. I did see some 4.5. Cleveland at home against Pittsburgh. Cleveland getting healthier. Look at all the guys that are getting back on offense this week. Baker Mayfield going to start a quarterback now. Nick Chubb back. Jack Conklin back. J.C. Treader back. Jarvis Landry all back for the Cleveland offense. But really, defense is where this plays. The Browns' defensive front has been awesome at pressuring the pocket and getting to the quarterback. 20 sacks, second most in the league. How do you think Ben Roethlisberger at 39 and that mediocre makeshift offensive line is going to hang? I just envision Big Ben running around, thinking he's 34, 35, thinking he can still scoot back there, taking a big sack, throwing under pressure, interception. It could be a long day for that Steelers offense. I like the home team by a touchdown. And yeah, if it's 4 and you miss 3.5, it's the same bet. I'm going to win 3.5. You're going to push 4, but you're not going to lose on a 4-point decision. So I still like Cleveland here. I like them to win this game by at least a score. And then the other play in the NFL that we gave out, Vikings plus 2. Did not know that Dak Prescott was likely not going to play. Got a little lucky there. I will completely admit that. I think tweeted that out Thursday morning. Vikings was plus 2 because I thought it was going to get to 3. There was some 2.5 Wednesday. And I thought, all right, well, this will get to 3. By the time we get to kickoff, all that parlay money, all the liability, all the rollovers, it's all going to lead to Dallas. But we saw the 2.5 disappear Thursday morning. And I'm like, uh-oh, well, I want 2. I'd much rather have 2 than wait for 3, you know? And then, bam, the reports start coming out late Thursday afternoon about Prescott's calf. And, you know, the practice wasn't great. He tried to power through and press. I don't think he's playing. And I talked to multiple bookmakers who saw this thing shoot. You know, it's Minnesota plus 2, and then all of a sudden it's pick 'em. And then a couple respected players that bet mostly on info and things that most people don't have. One of those guys hit a book in Vegas big on Minnesota pick 'em. At which point I got a phone call that said, hey, Dak's not playing. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, we don't know that, but we're taking bets from players under the impression that he's not going to play. And then another group came in and laid Minnesota minus 1. So when that happens, something's up. And people are asking, you know, how far does this spread go? Is it going to get to 5? Is it going to get to 6? No, it's not. Because think about the potential of the books getting absolutely slammed by a middle. Remember, Dallas was at 1.3. Well, 2.5. Almost 3. So from Dallas minus 2.5 to Minnesota minus 3, that's already a 5.5-point move. I know it's not the same as a move from 2 to 7 because you're not really crossing through any key numbers. You're just going through 0, and that's not a key number. But Dak is worth probably 6 points of the spread. Maybe he's worth 7. Thing is, if you move Minnesota to 4 or 4.5, those same people that have Minnesota pick, Minnesota minus 1, they're going to come in over the top and they're going to take Dallas plus 4 plus 4.5 and create a 4, 4.5-point middle. Now, not everybody's going to be able to do that, but I don't think the books want this game to land Minnesota 3. 23-20, 27-24, 30-27. That's a disaster result on Sunday Night Football. I don't think it's going to cross through 4. It might get to 4, but I still think 3.5s are going to be ripe. This line is already shaped. This market is already shaped. with the inclination that Dak is not going to go. And here's the other thing. That total went from 55 to 51, 51 and a half. That total doesn't move down 4 points if Dak Prescott's playing. So the bookies don't think he's playing. The professional bettors don't think he's playing. That's where this line is. Very interesting 4.5, 5 point move on a Thursday afternoon based off of no news. There were reports, but no news. Still don't think on Sunday when Dak is ruled out, assuming he's ruled out, the line's not going to move 3 more points. It's not going to move the Minnesota -6. It can't. They can't do that to themselves. But I'm happy to take the two. And in the Super Contest, this is a free space. Minnesota +1.5. Put the picks in this morning with Winner's Circle Proxy. Awesome service out there in Las Vegas. You have to take the Vikings in any locked-in line contest. Anything that locks in Wednesday, Thursday. There are several contests that have Minnesota +1.5 or +2. You got to take the free space. Have to do it. We talked about John Morant for MVP, 35-1. Tweeted that out at Chicken X Dinner Thursday night. This kid is balling right now. Did you see him the other night against Golden State? Grizzlies beat the Warriors in overtime. In Golden State, 104-101, Ja had 30 points, out-dueled Steph Curry. Through the first three games of the NBA season, Morant was averaging 35 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block, and a partridge in a pear tree. He has my full attention. Are all those numbers attainable? No. But there's no ignoring Morant's potential to become a superstar player in this league. And if he can help Memphis become a top 3, top 4 seed in the West, the narrative writes itself. And obviously with futures, you have to get ahead of the curve. His MVP odds have started to budge a little bit, but on Wednesday they were still 35-1, 33-1, 30-1. Market a little bit lower now. Some books have 20, some books have 22, some books have 25. There are some 30 still available. But if he balls out, that number is going to keep dropping. He's worth a wager still at 30-1 if you can find it. He's like the 11th or 12th guy on the betting sheet at some books. Luka, Curry, Giannis, Durant, Embiid, Jokic, LeBron, Lillard, Harden, Trey. All viable options. But given the price and the payout, whoo. Is Morant the best player in basketball? No. But he can prove to be one of the most valuable. If Memphis takes a major leap, a lot like Denver last year, it will undoubtedly be because Morant put up big numbers and made everybody else around him better. He reminds me a lot of a kid from Chicago who took the league by storm when he was 22. Derrick Rose. Took the Bulls to a number one seed. Got the MVP that year. Man, very similar. Not similar players, but similar possibilities. Similar potential. And John Morant, 22 years old. If you're ahead of the curve on Morant, too, you'll put yourself in a good spot. We always say the right future bet puts you in a position to make money no matter what. A lot like our Atlanta Braves future. You could have hedged it, could have sold it, could have prop swapped it, whatever. If you're ahead of the curve on Morant at a book like DraftKings or PointsBet, those books allow you to cash out of your bet. So if he's one of the top two or three contenders in March or April, you could take your money and run. There's a lot to like about his upside. And I've watched him play now for a handful of games in this season. It's time to make a bet. His stock is only going to go up, and I think he's a very good pop at 30-1. Speaking of Morant and his potential for MVP, I had a buddy try and make a bet in Colorado on Morant at 35-1. And he wanted the nickel. Now, this is a winning player, full disclosure. So as you can understand, a guy like this is going to get limited more times than not. But at a book that prides itself on taking 8, 9, 10 team parlays and doing all this fancy shit and, you know, trying to acquire customers and create a huge database and all that, my buddy can't bet at said book. 35-1 for a nickel to win $17,500. He put it in, hit submit, got rejected. They came back and said, you know what? We're not going to give you that nickel. We're not going to give you $500. We're going to give you $7. Seven. These books will take your parlays. DraftKings, FanDuel, PointsBet, FoxBet. They'll take your parlays. They'll take your Sam Gamers. But they won't take bets from winners. I think most people know that, but some don't. That's really the biggest issue in the space. People that win can't get down. They get limited or kicked out. You'll hear a story from Dink about getting reduced to $1.14 later on in the show. Winning players really struggle because they have to go to all these different outs to get down. And a lot of them have to go to the offshore shops or local bookies because none of these books are taking bets from winners. And even the Vegas joints, like, they'll take a nickel, they'll take a dime. I mean, that's not bad for a pro. But some of these books aren't taking, they're not taking $10 from winners. You've seen what Spanky and those guys tweet. I talk to Vegas Rick and them all the time. They can't get anything down. It's flagged, it's marked, it's circled. Nope, we won't take this. We won't take $1,000, we'll take $23. We won't take $500, we'll take $5. We won't take a nickel, we'll take $7. That's the worst part of the space. And it sucks. And the guy just laughed. He's like, I can't believe we can't get this down. Like, $7? Everybody will take your parlay, though. And they'll pump their parlays, but they won't take bets from winners. Last thing, Tree Bark Falafel, 5-2 in the NFL this season. Took it on the chin last week with the Bears against the Buccaneers. Let's hear who this maniac has in week 8.
Hello, you dirty bitches. How does it feel winning all that money? That's right, I'm 5-2 this season, which means you've won a lot more money than you've lost. Now, we're going back to basics, because it has to hurt so good to win. That's right. If it looks like it's going to hurt, you'll probably win. That's my strategy. This week's pick, take Indianapolis Colts -2.5 against Tennessee Titans. Thank you.
That's my guy, Tree Bark Falafel, taking you into another weekend on Chicken Dinner. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he is a legend in the sports betting space. He lives in Las Vegas, moved out there in the mid-90s to bet on sports professionally. But the path there is interesting, which we'll learn from Alan Dinkinson at Dink Inc. on the Twitter machine. Dink, it's an honor to have you on the show, man. Welcome.
For letting me be here. I appreciate it.
When did you start this racket? How did it begin for you? I love the stories. Everybody has a different path to when they made their first sports bet or when they got into the space. How did it start for you?
1971, when I was 18, is probably when I started making my first bet. I went to Roosevelt Raceway when I was 15. Two of the older guys at the basketball park brought me, and I was mesmerized by it. So it started a little with horses, but I didn't have any money. I would just go there. For 2 or 3 years, I didn't have a bankroll to bet. So I learned how to bet, what I was looking for and what not to do and what to do. When I was there, I met a local bookmaker. He told me, do I bet sports? I go, I don't know how to bet. I don't know where to bet sports. So he took a little bit of my action, but he also made me give him my friend's action, and I had a quarter sheet, which I had no idea I could make money like that. I just guaranteed money from my friends, which brought some interesting stories and problems. But that was my first dealing with betting and bookmaking at the same time. And then after a while, I said to the bookmaker, this 25% free roll is pretty good, but I'm costing myself a lot of money by not doing it myself. So I started doing it myself. So my career was more early bookmaking than early betting. I wasn't that successful as a bettor, and neither were anybody I knew. So I decided to become a bookmaker at the age of like 19.
Well, I remember picking up envelopes. I was about 19 years old, so a very similar age. And I never took bets, but I, as you did, I referred people and got a cut way back in the day. But I remember I'd run around town and pick up envelopes. Think I always picked up. I never dropped off.
Yeah, that was common. But a couple of years later, somebody who I knew, I had a partner at the time, he suggested that we take on some bigger players. And I go, sure, we're making a lot of money taking on a lot of little players. Let's take on some bigger players. And we started booking very sharp people, the coachers, the computers. It was amazingly different. And I ended up into some serious debt until I figured out how to make those people work against each other and move lines accordingly and take on as many customers as I can. And so it was like a gradual, nice uphill, then a crash, and then an uphill, and a pretty good uphill. And then I got busted and got a felony, and that was the end of my bookmaking career.
When you say you had to make them work against each other, you can't exactly make them do it. You're doing it with the number, obviously, but how challenging is that to get those guys to work against each other like that?
The object was to know who was the winning player and know who influences the line. I had a lot of customers at that time who were playing middles and just thought my lines might have been off, but what they were is they were sharp. There was no Don Best to see what the numbers were, and everybody had these rundown sheets and would get a rundown and fill in the little markers and then cross them out when the changes came. And, you know, at that time, it was kind of important to give a courtesy bet. Now, when you're doing college football or college basketball, there's a long rundown period. So you just can't keep calling for updates without giving you a nickel or a dime play here or there. And a lot of people were calling for plays to see what my line was, but most of them were doing middles, and they gradually learned that they were losing more to me than to the other bookmaker, and toned down the middles to just give me courtesy bets. But there were, because my customer base was high and varied from super sharp to super square, if you move your line accordingly, you can get bets on both sides. You can actually need the right side if you work really hard at it. I had four clerks. They were all girls for a while. So that was the lure of having people call me. There was a lot of little things I could do. I just knew the winning players are still going to win, and I just had to make sure my business did not depend on them to lose anymore.
Do you become as successful as you are as a bettor without taking bets? Do you think that's even possible?
I'd be different. I wouldn't have gotten all the knowledge of, I became a lot closer to those people. We had a good relationship, and I learned what to do and what not to do from them the hard way. There was a lot of lessons learned that people wouldn't learn. Do I think it's possible to be good without being a bookmaker? For sure.
Why can't you bet at Caesars anymore?
I bet at William Hill, which is Caesars now.
I thought you were banned at Caesars. I read that.
Oh, I've been restricted at some sports books, but I haven't been banned at too many. I believe that if you give sports books that you can beat nickel bets or less, they'll never ban you, because they'd rather take that nickel bet from you than a two dime bet from somebody else down the road. So it's a lot of work. And, my first line of betting is when the line comes out. My second line of betting is when the line starts moving. My third line of betting is when I get information on injuries and goalies. And my fourth line of betting is clothing lines that move too much and I can bet back on the other side.
You'll love this. I had a buddy who lives in Colorado. I tried to get him to make a bet on Ja Morant, the Grizzlies' young superstar. He's going to be a very good player in the NBA. He tried to bet a nickel at 35-1 on Morant to win the MVP. Okay, so he puts the bet in, 500 to win. I think it was 17-5. He gets the wheel of death. The bet gets declined, Dink. And they say, we won't give you a nickel. We'll give you $7.
Yep, I get those at times.
Seven!
I get those at times. Sometimes you make those bets at night when nobody's there. It's on auto. And you get those things. Resorts does that, but Resorts during the day, will give me a nickel on everything. But at night, they'll offer me $1.14 sometimes. And I never know exactly when that night starts. I guess it's around 10 p.m. my time. But it's just ridiculous. And for a while, it frustrated me because I didn't realize there was a night line and a day line. But that place is, that lasts to be a bookmaker, and they've made so many mistakes in their sports book. Their sports book doesn't have a scoreboard. You have to put your username and your password in. The password has to be 10 letters and capitals and numbers and symbols. And they make you not want to bet with them. I don't understand how they run their business. And that's with Squares, too. They have so many errors in what they've done, and they don't move their lines correctly either. So you have to keep them because you'll find some value with them. The bookmaking world is insane now with restricting bettors and throwing people out. And, we only want losers. I don't understand that. I don't think they understand that if they break all their losers, they'll have no business. That's not the way to run your business to an optimum earn.
My biggest issue, Dink, with I think a lot of these, I'll call them American books, because I'm talking about, the DraftKings and the PointsBets and the FanDuels and those type of places. What they can do now with their technology, it is so ass backwards. They can send push notifications to their players. So if you have an account with any of these books, they can send you essentially a text right to your home screen that says, hey, Packers Cardinals kicks off in an hour. Make sure you put in your 6-team same game parlay. How can they lead you to water like that?
Yeah, they've been known to put up parlays that almost can't win, like how many strikeouts a pitcher will have when it's declared he's only going to pitch two innings, and you can only bet over. You can't. It's not a choice in these parlays in some place. I don't even look at them. Most books are only want to win, and they only want to write winning bets, and that's not the best way to win. The best way to win is to work the line to get two-way business, as much business as possible.
Where are your favorite places to bet in town in Vegas?
Oh, God. Circa by far, and South Point, but South Point has reduced limits. Then Westgate, and then all the other ones are like little battlefields.
I love the comparison between battlefields. That's interesting. I'm curious to know what your day is like. I mean, on an average day, what time do you get up? What time do you look at the screen? How does that process go throughout the day? I'm curious, what does an average day look like for you?
Well, the average betting day starts when hockey lines come out, which could be any time now. BetOnline puts them out at first, but they only take $250. So I'm waiting for some of the bigger sports books to come up, and then I'll attack those right away. So that's at like 4, let's say. Then so we're going to work from the afternoon on, but we'll get the 24 hours in. So my next thing is to have my bets before game time, and to check out the latest goalie changes or injury information, and then look at a line close to closing and go, God, I didn't lay 40 on this game. Now I can take 47. I'm going to do that. I passed a line minus 40, and the line has moved 27 cents. Basically, then I'm betting against sharps, but I'm getting a pretty good number. The sharps laid 40. I'm going to take 47. I have bets for tomorrow where I laid 30. And then that line has moved to 57, so some people are going to take the 47 against me. And I usually bet, I'm quoting a 10-cent line because I do bet a Pinnacle, and that's my most important book. So after that, I'm watching the games and looking for injuries and notes, and I do get a little feel. Then I chart the games and grade them before I go to sleep. Every game gets a grade like I'm a professor in a college. An A minus for one team is a D for the other. A B minus would be a C plus for the other. And you can have an even grade of, when I think a game is played pretty evenly. And that includes a spread, like Florida's game yesterday where they won 5-3. They don't get graded as each team is equal. They get graded as you're supposed to win this game 3 out of 4 times. Did you play that kind of game? Which they did, because they won the first period 11-1, even though the score was 1-1. And they dominated the second period and kind of coasted on the third period. But so they got a B minus, and Arizona got a C plus. even though they probably deserve less because they're terrible, it's expected that they're terrible. So they didn't play as terrible as they've been playing, but they still got a subpar grade. I was listening to your podcast yesterday talking about Chicago and Arizona. Arizona is atrocious. They're almost like unbettable on or against.
And it's getting to that point where you just can't fire. You can't lay $3 against them. And even when you want to lay the puck and a half, hell, now you're laying 180, 185.
Yeah, I don't lay the puck line. I want my team to work with me. I don't really want them to, I want them to win the game and not lose, win by one, if they're up by two, will they back off a lot and give up a goal in the last 30 seconds? I want my motivation to win my bet, the same motivation as my team playing. I don't feel that way about football. I don't bet money lines in football, but in hockey, it matters a lot. That end game is so wild in hockey with empty net goals for totals and pull the goalie down three, and now is a common strategy. Coaches finally learned that pulling the goalie earlier is much better. So I'd rather just have my team try to win. So I'm basically looking at these minus 380s plus 300 lines, and that's way too much juice for me to think the line isn't somewhere in between.
When it comes to handicapping the hockey and the baseball, those seem to be your bread and butter at this point. You have made it to a point in your life where you're going to make numbers, you're going to grade baseball, hockey. Why did you give up football handicapping cold turkey?
Lack of success. too much to do. And then, I was always a hockey fan. I had Devil season tickets, then Ranger season tickets. Then I moved to San Diego for a little while. I had gold season tickets. I don't have Vegas season tickets because I'm more into watching games than going there. Parking is a little harder there. It's gotten better. I go to like one out of every four games at T-Mobile, but not a season ticket holder. Maybe I'm just older and I don't want to be committed to going to games, and I do want to watch the early games. And then there's I have to leave after the second period to go to the Golden Knight game. So I don't go to as many games as I used to, but I always loved hockey. I always enjoyed it. The lines were weaker, when I was in my 20s and 30s, so it was easier to beat. There weren't that too many people doing it. One of the guys who was successful showed me a system where if his team had 10 or more shots on goal, they were a good bet the next time. And I thought that was, wow, this is advanced analytics. And now it's it's caveman analytics. But now shots are graded from the point where they're taken, and the goalie save percentage can be calculated by how many saves he makes on shots that that have a 40% save chance or 98% save chances. The numbers are wild out there. It's almost too much to do with them. So I try to keep it a little simpler than finding everything out, but I've learned from people who are more advanced than me now, because they're much more mathematical, what's out there. And I go, wow, I can't compete with all these people to have a model like that. But I think some of the old things, I think when they model, there's a little bit they leave out in terms of like watching the games. And hockey's a funny sport because it's not like a lineup. It's like line one could be dominant, line four could be really good, line three could be ineffective, line two could be average. It's four different games within a game. Defensive pairings too. It's like, wow, when these two guys are out there playing 40% of the game, they dominate the game defensively. But they have to use these other guys for 60% of the game. And a couple of them seem to be inadequate. So that's got to be into your consideration of a team. What team functions well as a 20-man unit? Goaltending, to me, is a little bit overrated. I feel the same way about pitchers. I think that's in the line more than people realize. But still, there are some backup goalies you don't want, but not that many. And every year, a backup goalie, about 20% of the backup goalies become the number one goalie, and things switch around. Hot goalies matter to a degree. Like Bobrovsky now is puzzling because he was so overrated on Florida last year. He was just terrible. And this year he's really, really good again. Now, in my mind, it's like, okay, you had two good games. I still don't believe it. But now he's had four or five really good games, and I'm beginning to think that whatever was flawed in his style has been corrected. So, I will take goalies into consideration. For the Rangers, I really don't want Georgiev over Shesterkin, but there aren't that many where it matters all that much.
Your mind works in such a fascinating way, man. I love the way you think and process and analyze.
Yeah, it just works for me. I couldn't get that to work in football or basketball. It was too hard.
Football's hard. The NFL...
The NFL is just, the lines are really good.
It's Plinko.
It's not quite Plinko, but it's pretty random. And you can see so many games you're watching and it's like mid-fourth quarter and you don't know what to do. And you don't know if your bet's good anymore. There's always going to be these 14-point swings on interceptions and like Heinicke getting tackling himself at the half-yard line. But I'll try to bet some Wong teasers, the teasers that cross 3 and 7 and minus 10. There's still little edges you have, but just going, just waking up the Sunday morning going, hey, the Jets are 7-point dog against New England. I think the Jets are going to get killed, or I think the Jets are going to be good today. The 7 minus 10 either way is going to beat you.
I wanted to go out with a story. I heard you tell this story before, but it's worth repeating for my audience because I don't know if they've heard it or not. It's when you and Billy obviously both have beards back in the day because you can't walk into a book and get a bet down. Billy couldn't do it either. But you beat Billy to the spot once, and he wasn't happy that you beat him to the spot. Can you share that with us, please?
Yeah, actually, you could bet at the sports books then. They weren't shutting you out. And they gave you 5 dimes. So first in would get the money. So there was a game, and I know it was a Pac-10 game. And I'm going to make it USC Arizona because that's what I think it was. And God knows how many years it was, 96 maybe, where Billy was betting plus 7.5. And I always had runners at different casinos back then. And I gave the order for plus 7.5, knowing no one was going to get it. And then Mike, one of my runners at a major sportsbook, MGM maybe, got the plus 7.5 for 5 dimes. And I said, how'd you get that? And he said, it was there. So I go, wow, I guess Billy's runner was, in the restroom or something. So about 20 minutes later, my phone rings. And nobody called where I was. It was in an office. Not too many people had that number. And I pick it up, and it's Billy Walters, who definitely one of the people who didn't have that number. And I have no idea how he got that number. But he in his southern accent, said, hey, one of your runners beat my man, and that's my bet. I want that bet plus 7.5. Will you give it to me? And I go, Billy, I didn't do anything wrong here. I didn't knock out your runner or trip him or something. He wasn't there. Somebody got it. It was me. No, I'm not going to give you the 7.5. So he accepted that and he hung up. And my team was up 7 points late in the game. There was a touchdown to send the game into overtime. His team scored a touchdown, kicked the extra point, went up 7. My team had the ball. Threw an interception, returned for a touchdown, lost by 13. They changed the rules so that can't happen anymore. And that was the end of the time I beat Billy Walters to a bet.
You beat him, but you still fucking lost.
I beat him and it cost me $5,500.
I don't mean to laugh, but you have to look back.
That was a funny story. That's a very funny story, The story is a good story just him calling me up and wanting to bet. But the results of that bet, which were incredible, makes the story an unbelievable parlay of me getting that bet the only time I beat him to a bet ever and how it lost.
How did he get the number?
I don't know. I would think from the sports book somehow. I have no idea. I wasn't registered, and there was no apps. I have no idea, but he was capable of doing a lot of stuff. I'm sure he knew somebody who knew me well, who had that number, but I never, you know, what am I going to do? You know, like, now Billy Walters has my number. He never called it again, so I never beat him to another bet.
Well, when he calls, Dink, that means you're doing something right, and you have paved such a path for yourself. I love your story. I love all that you've done, and you're still grinding and tracking and going through all these games like a professor, and it makes me smile, man, because you still love what you do, and you're still very passionate about it. He is Alan Dinkinson. They call him Dink on Twitter at Dink Inc., D-I-N-K-I-N-C. This went longer than I thought, man. I know you're busy, but I appreciate the time and I appreciate the knowledge and all the stories you shared with us. Thanks for joining the show.
My pleasure. Anytime you need me, give me a ring.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Dink, Alan Dinkinson, for hopping on the program. Could have talked to him for a lot longer. Maybe we'll get together next time I'm out in Las Vegas. Record check 185, 175, and 7. We are up 1.2 units. As you know, got the Braves in the hopper at 14-1 on this show, and 5 football picks pending. Michigan -4, Oklahoma -19, Ole Miss +2.5, Browns -3.5, and the Vikings +2. Cash up tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner. So.